Okay, we're beginning here on Bet Amar Aleph with the new Masechta, Masechta Sotah. I'll give a slight introduction to Masechta Sotah, not as big as other Masechtot, because the Masechta itself deals with many of the issues, things that we would normally do in an introduction that maybe aren't touched upon by the Gemara. Here the Gemara will deal with in Prate Pratim all the issues of Sotah. The Parsha that is found in Parshat Naso, it is found prior to the Parsha of Nazir. There it describes the process Maaseh Sotah. The juxtaposition of Parshat Sotah to Parshat Nazir, the Gemara will deal with right away. We already saw that in Masechet Nazir. We're going to see it again here in the beginning of Sotah. Process of Sotah, to keep in mind, the whole Parsha of Sotah deals with a woman who already has what we call Raglaim Ledavar. Already has a lot of circumstantial evidence against her. And therefore, the process that's being laid out here is not just some innocent woman who is being taken to task by her husband, but rather a woman who's put herself in some very precarious situations, and that has precipitated the problem that we have at hand. Now, how we go about this, or when one should go about this, is actually discussed in the Gemara as to whether this is a mitzvah to do this, it's a reshut, it's optional for the husband to do this. It might relate to another machloket in Masechet Gittin with regards to Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai, when a husband is permitted to divorce his wife, where Beit Shammai believes you can only divorce for Irvat Davar, and therefore maybe over here we should lean towards doing this in order to avoid the divorce. On the other hand, Beit Hillel says that a husband can divorce his wife for any reason, as long as they're not getting along, that's enough of a reason, then maybe over here there's no necessity to have the Meisilta. But it's optional if you want to use this as the method to solve the problem or deal with the issue at hand. Now, the Mei Sotah is described in the Parshia of Sotah, again, we'll darshan all the psukim, is, in essence, it's a miracle the way that the waters of the Sotah that the woman drinks then impact on her, and that's both to the positive side and the negative side that we'll see in the Gemara that come up. On that, the Ramban says something very interesting. He says, "V'ehine ein b'chol mishpatei Torah davura talui b'neis zulati ha'inyan hazeh." There's nothing in the Torah that depends on a miracle for its constant mechanism, and that will be a regular part of the way that it's adjudicated or dealt with in this situation. By definition, a neis usually means something out of the ordinary, something that you wouldn't see on a recurring basis. Here, the Torah, in a sense, codifies a miracle to happen through the procedure on a regular interval based on any time the person brings his wife in this situation to the Mikdash. So the Ramban notes that this is very unusual. We don't see this anywhere else. Shupela v'neis kavua she'aseh b'Yisrael. It's a fixed neis that will happen amongst Klal Yisrael biotam rubam osim rotzono shel makom. Because on the majority, v'nei Yisrael do what Hashem wants from them. Ki chafetz l'man tzidko v'yaser anashim, because of his will and his righteousness, he wants to afflict the women, shlo tasena ki zimat yeter ha'amim, so they don't act and behave like other nations. That this behavior is considered to be inappropriate, so inappropriate that God's willing to intervene in it with a miracle in order to demonstrate the uniqueness of Klal Yisrael, and the fact that they are differentiated in this behavior from the other nations. Umenakot Yisrael min ha-mamzerut, and to make sure that Bnei Yisrael is cleared out of any mamzerim, shiruim lashrot shechina betucham, so that they should be pure and tahor, and that will give them the ability to have the shechina rest amongst them. Ulfikach pasak anyin hazeh mishah shenitkalkalu be'averot. He says, because of that, as we'll see later on in the Masechta, Daf Mem Zayin, that once the znut became a regular activity, and the same thing is true with hariga, with the killing became regular activities, then the miracle no longer worked. But lu mesota. Sota was not, the mesota were not relevant, because it's only relevant when the majority, or the overwhelming majority, act in the proper way, and the people that are deviating from that norm are the minority, and then the Meisota helps to correct that problem. So then it says, Mishirabu Anoachim, Mishrabu Arotzchim, that's the Agadot over there, then they stopped dealing with this issue, or no longer was a viable way to deal with it, because Hashem was not going to perform a miracle for people who are otherwise Noafim and acting in this way. He then quotes a pasuk from Hosea Dalid, which is Lo Hefkod Al Benotechem Ki Tiznena Val Kalotechem Ki Tinafena Ki Heim Imazonot Iparedu Bimak Deshot Izabechu Am Lo Yavin Ilabet. So the Ramban, in quoting this pasuk, says that Hashem will no longer take care or punish those that are acting inappropriately. Why is that? Veina katuv omer shetiena nashim noafot pturot min avon bavur shebaleim noafim. It's not telling you that these people are no longer responsible for their behavior because their husbands are acting inappropriately. Rak shelo yaseh ben anesa gadol hazeh shehu naaseh lahem lichvodam, that was done for their kavod liotam am kadosh. The whole point of this miracle is because they're a holy nation. Behem lo yavinu betovazot v'liochetzuba. They won't even understand it, and they won't want it because of the way that they're behaving, or the way that they're behaving, which is vam lo yavin yilabet. Klomar yilaked b'sichluto. And so therefore, the Ramban says that the mesilta only works when you have an otherwise, let's call it, good nation, and also a good husband. That if there's any flaw in the husband, then the mesilta also doesn't work. And that's based on the Psukim Hosea. We don't have enough time to delve into it right now, but that perek in Hosea speaks about the Kohanim and how the Kohanim are no longer effective as Kohanim, or they're not really acting as the Mishartei Hashem if the Kohanim themselves are doing bad and evil and wrong, which itself parallels back to Shmuel Aleph with the story of Eli and his children, that the sons of Eli, because of their behavior, are not considered to be Kohanim or Re'uim Liot Mishartei Hashem. And the sin is even more grave because they're acting or pretending to be the Mishartei Hashem. And meantime, they're behaving in a way, and the sins that are mentioned there are sins that are parallel to what we're discussing here. And that's what the Perek in Hosea seems to be dealing with. In that context, it also brings the din of Ni'uf and this whole concept of Sota, in that context, indicating that Sota, or the whole parsha of Sota, is only relevant when all the players are acting appropriately. And the deviant behavior is simply that, deviant behavior. But if the deviant behavior is a result of a societal norm, or the one who's trying to have the deviant behavior change, they themselves are not Nikiyim Mi'avon, then it doesn't work. That's why the Gemara will darshan the pasuk at the end. Nika ish mi'avon, v'shahi tisa et avuna. That the only time that the woman carries the avon through the mesota is v'nika ish mi'avon, if the man is cleared of all sin. And then the Ramban concludes here. V'zeta ma shamru v'nika ish mi'avon, b'zman sh'ish minukeh mi'avon, mayim bodkim et ishto. Ena ish minukeh mi'avon, ena mayim bodkim et ishto. If the person themselves is not clean, or does not have a clean slate, it's not going to check his wife out, because he's not deserving of that miracle. He's not deserving of that divine providence. But nikayon ahu. What's the nikayon? Shelo ba'alea mishikina la v'sinistera. So Ramban quotes one possibility, which is that once he's already warned her, and then she acts against that warning, and now is a suratim until she drinks the water, if he engages with her at that point, that's a sin. That's a violation. He's a surator at that point. V'yesh mifarshim shimbala bal shum bila asura koyomav ina ma'im budkimota. The dea also that if the man acted inappropriately in any situation during his life, then he won't be deserving of that hashkacha pratit to have his wife checked by the mesuta. V'holam min alacha. This is an amazing statement by the Ramban. Shafilu ayu banav ubnotav noafim, even if his children were acting inappropriately, and he does not chastise them and does not stop them, it will not check his wife. Meaning that the complicity of the father in the behavior of the children makes him culpable for that behavior, and then he signed that negative side of what the children are doing, and it no longer will work for him. Baklahu shenes for kavod Yisrael. This whole thing is a nes for kavod Yisrael. It goes back to what we just discussed in Hosea and Shmuel Aleph, which is that Eli is blamed for the behavior of his children because he doesn't intercede. He doesn't chastise them. He doesn't tell them that they're doing something wrong. And he doesn't get involved in the situation. He lets the behavior go. Therefore, Eli is held responsible for that behavior of his children, even though Eli himself wasn't engaged in the behavior. And similarly over here, the Ramban is suggesting that a parent is responsible for the child's behavior. And if the parent looks the other way when the child is acting in a certain manner, then the parent is culpable for that behavior and not deserving of the divine providence that would be associated with the mei sota. I think in the modern era it's much harder. In a time where children were much more respectful of their parents and followed the ways of their parents in a more general sense, then it's much easier than to put the obligation, the culpability on the parent. In Western society, where there's tremendous premium put on the independence of each individual and the rights of each individual, then it's sometimes harder to make the parent culpable for the children, because many times the children will act against the will of the parents or against the warnings of the parents. But I think it's also important, like the Ramban says, is that lokeyabem, he didn't say anything. If he speaks up, if he chastises them and they don't listen, that's different than simply just watching as everything transpires and not intervening in any way. Right? That's just a small introduction to sota. Again, unlike other mesechtot, the mesechet itself deals with many of the issues that would have been otherwise appropriate for the introduction, and therefore it's worth just going straight into the mesechta now. Jizah mikaneli ishto, someone who is mikaneli ishto, the word mikane, as Rashi says, is lishna nakra nakat. As Rashi points out, a mikane over here is not used in the traditional sense of the word mikane, but it's used from what is mentioned in the pasuk, which is varvar lav ruach kina v'kineyet ishto. So that's the verb that is used to describe the husband's interaction with his wife. What exactly the word kine means, it'll be subject to a machloket at the end of today's daf, but kine can either mean hatra'a, which is a warning, or kine can also be ktata, which can mean causing friction. That the friction caused by the behavior both of the wife and the husband here, and so the kine is something that generates a certain amount of tension because of what he's doing. So that's the word kine. So it says a mekaneli ishto, Rabbi Lezer Omer, Mikane Lao Pishnaim, that this warning has to be given in front of two edim, Umashke Al Pied Echad. But to then generate the obligation to go drink the Meisulta, that can be done Al Pied Echad, or Al Pied Atzmo, or even by the Baal himself. So in terms of the stages of what happens here, the husband, and we'll see this in the Mishnah in 1 second, warns the wife not to act in a certain way. The wife violates that, and thus what the husband told her not to do. So here, Rabbi Lezer says, the warning has to be done in front of two edim. The fact that the wife violates the warning of the husband, that does not require two edim. It would be enough if you have an ed echad or a pi atzmo. The Tosfot Shantz over here already raises the issue. If it's al pi atzmo, if it can be by himself, then it's certainly al pi ed echad. Why do you need to tell me both of them? So the Rishonim here distinguish and say that al pi atzmo would be because naseit chaticha shel isura. When a person themselves makes a declaration, it might be that his testimony is sufficient here because he can change the woman's status vis-a-vis himself. And if he says that she was isolated with this individual, mityachev, this individual, he makes her into a chaticha asura, something that an ed echad can't do by themselves. So the Mishnah had to come and tell you, Eid Echad, also not just Al Pi Atzmo, and vice versa. If it only told you Al Pi Eid Echad, you would think because the Eid Echad is Ra'oi Litzdareif to other Eidim. The Baal is a Nogeh, but the Var maybe shouldn't be believed. And therefore the Mishnah gives you the each individually and tells you that either one would be sufficient, Al Pi Eid Echad or Al Pi Atzmo. Rabbi Yeshua Omer, Mekanele Al Pi Shnayim. Rabbi Yeshua says, similar to Rabbi Eliezer, that the kinuy has to be done with two edim, umashke al pi shnayim. And you also require two edim for the fact that she violates the kinuy over here. Ketzad mikanela. How does he do this? What is the procedure for kinuy over here? Ketzad mikanela. how does he go about warning the wife or doing this kinoy? Now, there is a problem in the way that the Mishnah is structured, because the Mishnah, it says, Ketzan Mikanala, how does he do it? And then he explains what doesn't work. So obviously we have what's Chasurei Mechsera over here, and that's what the Gemara says, that there's a Chasurei Mechsera. Omer la bifnei shnayim, al tidabri imish ploni. He says before to Edim, don't speak to so-and-so. Vidibrayimo. And she engages in conversation with him. Adayin hi muteret lebeita, muteret lechol bitruma. She is muteret to her, beita means her husband. And she's still, if she's a kohenet, muteret to eat truma because of the marriage to her husband. Nichnisa imo lebeita seter. She enters with this man into seclusion. Vishata imo kedei tuma. And tarries there the amount of time of tuma, which again will be defined by the Gemara. Asura le beita, vasura lechol bitruma. She's a sur to her husband now, and if she's a married to a kohen, she will now be precluded from eating truma. V'imet, and if the husband passes away, choletzet velo mityabemet. Then she has to have chalitza and not yibum. So now, in terms of the chasurei mechsera, which the Gemara will deal with later, obviously, if he says, don't speak to so-and-so, that is not sufficient grounds for generating the mesota. And so therefore, the first example is, if he says, don't speak to her, whether she speaks to the individual or she secludes with that individual, that won't generate any sur and will not generate a need for drinking of the mesota. On the other hand, if he says, al tisteri imploni, do not be secluded with so-and-so, that is the kinoy that works. If she then speaks to that individual, it won't be problematic. Only then, if she secludes with that individual, violates that warning, will you have a problem. The machloket in the Mishnah is, how many edim do you need to that seclusion? Do you need two edim to that seclusion? Or is it sufficient that it's al pi echad o al pi atzmo? And that's the machloket here between Rabbi Lezer and Rabbi Yoshua. They both agree that you need, in terms of the altisteri and ploni, you need two edim to get the process underway. We'll see in the Gemara that there is a third dayah, which says that for kinoy you would not need two edim. But as far as our Mishnah is concerned, for the kinoy, everybody agrees you need two edim. For the stira, they have a machloket as to whether you need two edim, or it's enough, al pi atzmo, al pi echad. According to Rabbi Yoshua, who says that you need two edim, so Rabbi Yoshua Omer, according to Rashi, says, Tzarich bet edim af listirata. You need two edim also for this stira. And what happens then if the Baal comes along and says to us that there was stira? What does that do? From Rashi, it sounds like that if the husband comes along and says that she was nistira, that she would be muteret, that there wouldn't be any issue at all. The Rambam, on the other hand, says that if it's al pi atzmo, she would be asura, because of the fact that he has made her into a chaticha asura over here. Right, so that's what maybe you have to distinguish over here, that Rabbi Yeshua's requirement for two edim is in order to allow the procedure of mesulta to take place, but it's not the determining factor in terms of the isur. The isur can be generated even al pi echad possibly or pi atzmo, but in order to go forward with the Torah's prescription, then you would need two edim. That's likely what the Rambam believes over here. Not that he's not possibly like Rabbi Yeshua, but he's possibly like Rabbi Yeshua. But he's saying that that's not the sole way that you can get to Isur. The Isur is separate from the din of the Meisota, or the ability to drink the Meisota. Also, the Tosfot Shans over here notes that at the end of the Mishnah, it enumerates the items that are Asura, which is Asura lebeita, she's Asur to her husband, Asura lechol bitruma. And he said, you could also add it over here, v'asura laboel, that she's also asura to the supposed perpetrator of the crime over here, which, in a case of an extramarital affair, ni'uf, we know that the woman is asura lebala, asura laboel, she's not allowed to engage with either her husband or with a no'ef. The same is true by asota. And as Rashi notes over here, when we say Asura Lebeita, it's Asura Misafek. Sota is all built around this idea of a Safek, that there's uncertainty. We'll see in the Gemara, as soon as there is certainty, we're not in the Parsha of Sota anymore. Then you've left the Parsha of Sota, and you've entered into the Parsha of Ni'uf, and whatever the dinim of Ni'uf are. Sota only applies when there's uncertainty into what happened in that point of seclusion. And so all the edut over here is edut about the fact that she's secluded with the individual. We have no testimony, no evidence, not even the husband, about what happened during that period of time of seclusion. And so Sota really revolves around that safek. So there, what the Tosfot chants, and we learned it out from the Gemara, because the Pasha says Vehi nitma'ah three times. So the he nitma'ah, one of those is darshan, that nitma'ah means that she's also asura leboel, that she's also affected her asura to the boel. And so the Tosfot chants asks, why doesn't that include it in the Mishnah? The Tosfot chants says, because it won't parallel with the first part of the Mishnah. The first part of the Mishnah, it says, muteret lebala, muteret lechol b'chuma. You couldn't say muteret leboel, because she's still married at that point. So since you can't create a parallel structure, the Mishnah didn't put in asura leboel, even though it happens to be true that she is asura leboel. Now, because sota is premised on a safek, the resultant outcome of what happens to the sota is either she drinks the mei sota in order to figure out what happened, the varer, it's a safek, or if she doesn't drink the mei sota, then the husband is asur to remain married to this woman. He will divorce her, but she loses out on her ketubah. And that would be the penalty of not drinking, is that it'll be, she'll be subject to divorce, but without getting her ketubah. So most of the issues in sota revolve around whether the woman gets her ketubah or does not get her ketubah in the face of a divorce, because if she can't drink the mei sota, why can't she drink the mei sota? If she can't drink the mei sota because of her, then she'll lose her ketubah. She can't drink the mei sota because of him, then she still will get her ketubah. And that's really the safek here, is we either want to clarify the safek to know for certain what happened, or if we can't clarify the safek, then because the husband and wife are now asurim, they have to divorce. And then who is the burden of that divorce on? And that will determine whether the husband has to pay for the ketubah, or whether the wife does not receive the ketubah. Right now the Gemara says, Michtei, Tana minazir salik. We just finished up Masechet Nazir. My Tana, the Katana, Sota. So then why did we enter into the world of Sota? So why is Sota after Nazir? That seems to be the question. So Kidder Rabbi, like we learned, the Drush of Rabbi, which we learned in the beginning of Masechet Nazir, the Tanya Rabbi Omer, Lama Nismecha Parshat Nazir, the Parshat Sota. Why is Parshat Nazir juxtaposed to Parshat Sota in the Torah? Lomar Lecha, to teach you. Shekola Roe Sota Bikil Kula, Yazir Atzma Min Hayayin. Because anybody who sees the Sota in her denigrated state, Yazir Atzma Min Hayayin, he will abstain from wine. Whether that literally means that he will take a neder nizirut, or he'll simply abstain from wine, is a machloket of how literally to take this line. It's interesting, I've mentioned this before, going from the Rav Goldwech, the Rosh Hashiva in KBY, he asks, why do you need the drusha of Rabbi? If the natural response to someone who sees a sota bikil kulo is yazir atzmo min hayayin, then why do I need Rabbi, or why do I need the juxtaposition in the Torah to tell me this? Like when you have the juxtaposition of kilayim and tzitzit, which we saw in the Gemara and Sota, we learn from that that kilayim is mutar and tzitzit. I wouldn't have thought that. The juxtaposition of the two tells me that it is mutar. Over here, what new information do I have that I didn't have before? So my interpretation of his answer is that kol ha'roeh sota b'kil kula yazir atzmo min hayayin, is that many times in our lives that we're faced with inspirational moments, a moment that garner inside of ourselves a certain impetus to act, but it's the momentary experience, emotional drive to act, but then it fades over time. And so many times, whether we take advantage of it or not, we know that over time it's going to fade. Yazirat's moment of yayin is because nizirut is a way to perpetuate that feeling of inspiration. So at the moment he sees the Nazir, the Sota B'kil Kula, yeah, Yazirat's moment, and he won't drink wine. A day later, 2 days later, 3 days later, as that feeling fades, he'll start to drink the wine again. He doesn't have that feeling. So capitalizing on that moment of inspiration and taking a Neder Nizirut extends the feeling beyond the momentary emotion that you have experienced. And that's what the idea of here is. How do I preserve the feelings that I have at this moment of inspiration? That's a neder nizirut. Or more broadly, it's a call to us that when we are inspired, that we should take action based on that inspiration that will last for the duration and in perpetuity, rather than just let it be a fleeting experience. And that's the meaning of what happens here. Now, it's interesting because I would note two things here. First of all, it's called a ra'e sota. It's not somebody who hears about a sota, but only someone who sees a sota. That has two implications. Number one is, it's pretty rare that someone would see a sota bikul kula. He'd have to be at the Beit HaMikdash at the time that a sota was there, leaving out how frequently it happened that a sota came to the Mikdash. But just the fact that he has to be there simultaneously while the whole procedure of a sota is going on. So that's pretty rare. And number two is that it says ro'eh means that he literally sees it. And I think the two are connected. First of all, ro'eh is an emotional experience. And that's inu domea ro'eh l'shomea. There's no comparison between seeing something versus hearing it. Seeing is believing, but it also has, and we have evidence of that in other places, the Marsha and the Gemara and Shabbat and Daf Pei Aleph talks about it, that seeing is a very, very emotional experience that has a deep imprint on the individual. And therefore, the Gemara says that only shekola ro'eh sota bikul kula, not about kola shomea sota bikul kula. That's number one. Number two is that it's a rare occurrence that he might experience that. So a person has to take note of this, and we'll see that later on in the Gemara. The Gemara is going to talk about this idea of Ashkacha Pratit and the difficulty of bringing together parties. Over here, the fact that Hashem puts you in this position, that you're in the Mikdash, when this is going on, that should tell you something, or that should inform you. You should be moved by what you're seeing here. And if you're moved by what you're seeing, you should act on that emotion. You should take to heart that you're here while this is happening. The fact that you're witnessing this, and having this emotional experience of witnessing this terrible procedure that's going on with the sota, they shouldn't just dismiss it. It's coincidence, or, oh, look at this woman, what she did. You have to take it to heart. It has to have meaning to you. And that inspiration has to impact you in a way that has a sustainable influence over you. The other thing I think might be interesting about this is we have the Mishnah Navot. Mishnah Navot tells us that Kol Mechalel Shem Shemayim B'tzinah, that a person is Mechal Shem Shemayim in private, in the end, Hashem exposes it to the public. And as we're going to see later on in the Masechta, the whole procedure of Sota is a Midah Keneged Midah. This woman violated or did something inappropriately in private. Now, it's all being exposed publicly, and the Midah Keneged Midah. The Gemara talks about why we use a Kli Cheres. Why do we do this? Why do we do that? And all of them are connected to her behavior with the Noef. And so what you see here is something unusual. And this might be why the Gemara makes a demand of you when you see a sota bikul kula, that there should be some reaction, which is that a person who sees the sota is suddenly brought face to face with the fact that even when something's done in private, it will be exposed. For this sota, it's exposed right now. But for every individual, they will have to face or be embarrassed by their behavior or their activities, and that we should take that to heart. And that seeing the sota is more impactful than just hearing about any aveira or somebody does something wrong or was punished for this. It's more impactful here because of the nature of the punishment, which is midah keneged midah, which is an exposure of something that was done in private. And therefore it also might be more impactful or should be more impactful on the individual that he takes it to heart. And that might be another driving force for this idea of kol ha'ro'eh sota bikul kula, as Yeretz Momin Ayayin should be impacted or should take note of what's happening over here. So Gemara says, v'litnei sota v'hada litnei nazir. Why don't you write sota first and then nazir, which would be the order of the parshiot as well as the order of the concept that Rabbi's bringing. You see a sota, Yeretz Momin Ayayin. It says, aydi ditani ktubot. Since we had masechet ktubot, V'tana ha-madir, within Masechet Ketubot, there is a perek that deals with a madir, Tana Nidarim. Therefore, it spoke about Nidarim. V'adi Tana Nidarim, Tana Nazir. Since we already dealt with Nidarim, we dealt with Nazir. The Domi, the Nidarim, which is similar to Nidarim, Tani Sota, Kid Rabbi. And then it puts in Sota, like Rabbi. So here, the Balei Tosafot noted, they say it much more explicitly in Nazir. The Gemara seems to be indicating here, the question about the position of Nazir is twofold. One is, and it's true of Sotah as well in some ways, but less so than Nazir, which is that the Masechet Nazir belongs in Kodoshim. Most of what happens to do with Nazir is really subject to Masechet Kodoshim, and should be found in Masechet Kodoshim. That's number one. So number two is, in general, the order of the Masechtot is an order in which the declining length of the Masechtot. Every Seder is lined up based on the longest Masechta first, and you end with the shortest Masechta. If you deviate from that norm, you have to explain why there was a deviation in the order. So the question here is twofold. What is the order of Seder Nashim? And then secondly, why is this found in Seder Nashim? The answer to why it's found here in Nashim and not Kodashim is because of Rabbi, which is Kol Harei Sota Bilkukula Yatzir Metzmo Min Hayayin. Sota, which has relevance to Nashim, and it also has, as the Rambam quotes it, as relevance to Gittin, to divorce, belongs in Seder Nashim. Once you connect Nazir to Sota, that gives you a reason to have Nazir within Seder Nashim. But then, what about the order? Why is Nazir found here in the middle of Seder Nashim, rather than at the end of Seder Nashim, being the smallest Masechet within Seder Nashim? Why isn't it found at the end? So the answer to that question is, well, we dealt with Ketubot, which had Nidarim in it. Nidarim is an extension of Ketubot, especially since that a lot of the issues of Nidarim are Ben Ish Li Ishto and Ben Av Li Bito, in the context of the father's right to marry off his daughter, as well as the husband's right to nullify his wife's Nidarim. So we dealt with Nidarim. Nazir is a subset of Nidarim, and therefore it follows Nidarim. And then we have those together, Nazir and Sota, together because of Rabbi's statement, even though it's out of order, but because of that statement. So the Gemara gives us both the reason for why Nazir is found in Seder Nashim, as well as the reason why we've just dealt with the whole bunch of Masechtot that maybe should have been found later on in the Seder, or maybe should have gone after Gittin and Kiddushin, rather than here in the middle of the Seder. Should know that some of the Rishonim, including the Rambam, believe that Masechet Sota, it wasn't immediately after Nazir, but rather at the end of Seder Nashim. And the question then would be, why is Nazir come before Sota, or what's the connection between Nazir and Sota, which the Gemara is addressing the order of the Masechtot, but not necessarily that Sota comes immediately after Nazir. And the Rambam claims that Sota is found at the after Gittin because it's a subset of divorce. It's a subset of the nature by which man and woman would separate, or the reasons for their separation, which would be connected to Masechet Gittin. I would just add here that there is an additional connection here between Masechet Sota and what we finished off the Masechet Nazir. The end of Masechet Nazir, the Mishnayot there, dealt with what's called Raglaim Ledavar. The circumstantial evidence, or the overwhelming evidence, points to something. And we're going to see that that is actually a refrain that comes up here in the beginning of Sota. The reason that this woman is in trouble now is because we have Raglaim Ledavar. We have circumstantial evidence that there's some sort of inappropriate behavior here. She was warned. She secluded, even after such a warning, about this particular individual, and secluded anyway. So we see that there is Raglaim Ledavar, and that's what causes us to bring her to the Mikdash and then impose the procedure of Sota, or being her Asur to her husband. So that would be another reason why Sota comes after Nazir, is that it's following this genre of Mishnayot of Nidarim. So even though we've said before that there is no order to the Masechtot, because Rabbi could have taught this Masechet and this Masechet in the Beit Midrash, therefore you can't imply just because a Mishnah and this Masechet comes before a Mishnah and another Masechet, we don't know which one came first. Nevertheless, in the codification and the canonization of this Darim in the Gemara, there you can ask the question. Because even though it may not have been taught an order in the Beit Midrash, but yet when they put together the Starim and the Masechtot in the Starim, they obviously gave some thought to the order, and that order is meaningful, and that's what the Gemara is trying to address over here. Right now, the Gemara begins, Hamikaneh. The Mishnah begins, Hamikaneh, Di'avad in L'chatchila lo. That's only Di'avad, meaning that he should not do this. But if he did do this, this is what the procedure is. L'chatchila, if he comes to ask us whether he should be Mikaneh at Ishto, the answer is no. And as Rashi points out over here, and Tosafot seconds Rashi in this issue, the problem here is the language that is used. The fact that the Mishnah begins with Hamikaneh, rather than simply saying Rabbi Lozer Omer, Hakinoi, or Hakinoi Rabbi Lozer Omer, tells you that there is some sort of reluctance to have one be Mikaneh. That might also connect you to Nazir before, where also the idea of Nazirot is something that we have a lot of question about entering into. The Gemara concludes from here, Kasavar Tana Didan, Asur Lekanot. That from here you can conclude that our Tana believes that you should not be Mekaneh, warning his wife in this manner. And we're going to see this at the end of today's daf, that there's actually a machloket, it's a dual level machloket. One machloket is whether it's a mitzvah to do kinui, only a reshut if it's optional. And the second question is, even if it is optional, do we want you to do it or do we not want you to do it? Do we try to dissuade you from acting in this way? So here, the Gemara concludes that our Tana clearly believes that we don't want you doing this kinui. As Tosafot points out over here, many Mishnayot and many Mesechtot have a start or an opening like this, which makes it sound like it's bidyabad, and yet the Gemara doesn't make a diuk out of that fact. So Tosafot says that it depends. It's not always that the Gemara does it. And he says, Val Korchach, over here, Idlan Meimar, Da'ocha, Mi Mishnah Yetera, Daik, Perish Rashi. That the reason that the Gemara here takes up the issue is because it seems to be extraneous language, or unnecessary language, and that's why the Gemara is going after it. Not simply because it opens with a term that is Bidiyabad, but simply the term itself was unnecessary. And that's why the Gemara is Midayek. Others suggest that it's only when the Gemara has an answer does it bring up the question. And so others suggest over here there's a machloket in our Gemara, which we're going to see about whether kinui is good or not. And therefore we have to assume that our Tana is telling us information about that because he has to have a position about it. And that's why the Gemara is middayek out of this, but it wouldn't be something that you would do in general in every Mishnah. So now, Amar Rav Shmuel bar Yevi Yitzchak, Kiava Patach Reish Lakish B'Sota. When Reish Lakish used to begin Masechet Sota, Amar Achi. So like we do when we begin a Masechta, we give a certain introduction. We know from the Gemara in Megillah that many of the Amoraim or Tanaim had practices of opening up their shirim on a Masechta with a quote from a Pasuk and then a little drasha on that Pasuk. So too, Reish Lakish had this with regards to Sota, and he say, Ein mizabgim lo adam, isha ela lefi ma'asav. That an individual only ends up with a woman that is appropriate for him. That means that they are deserving of each other. Because the staff of those that are wicked will not fall on the lot of the tzaddikim. So the first of all, the word shevet, you can use not just to be a staff, but shevet like a tribe. And that would be referring to mishpacha, the family. Or you can talk about shevet in the sense of a staff can be used to guide, or a staff can be used to punish. And so similarly, the drasha that we have about an isha can be ezer kenegdo, which is that she can be an ezer or she can be kenegdo. And so the person gets the woman that he deserves in that way, and the shevet aresha will not be ala gorala tzadikim, so that you won't get the staff or the inappropriate staff for the individual. The question here is, what does this have to do with what we've said until now? The likely connection is to what we just said before. We dissuade you from doing kinui. Why do we dissuade you from doing kinui? Rashi says that asur laknot, that the artana thinks that it's not appropriate, shemevi atzmo lidei tagar, causes friction in the marriage, v'edishto lidei nivul, and also causes his wife to be denigrated or treated in a manner, meaning the procedure in the migdash is not a pleasant one, and therefore he shouldn't engage in kina'ah. And Reish Lakish is telling you, the reason that you have a wife that's behaving in this way must lead you to a certain amount of introspection. Don't try to push off the problem onto the woman. You have to take a look at yourself and say, why do I have a woman that's acting like this? What am I doing that results in a woman acting like that? And that can be in two manners. One is your behavior precipitating that behavior in the woman? Are you not being a proper husband? Are you not acting appropriately towards the woman, and therefore she's seeking refuge somewhere else? Or, from the other standpoint, which is the pasuk here, which Gilo Yenuach Shevet Eresh Al-Goral Tzadikim. If you got such a woman, then that indicates something about your own behavior, your own ma'asim that maybe you need to introspect about, that maybe you don't have such a clean slate. And that's why we say Asur the Kanot. Then Amar Rabbi Bechanan Rabbi Yochanan, V'kashyan L'zivigan K'kriyat Yam Suf. And bringing them together is as difficult as Hashem's splitting of the sea. Meaning that if Hashem has to get the appropriate zivug, then that's very difficult to come about, because Hashem makes sure that every person gets the wife that is appropriate for him. Shinamar, to quote the pasuk, Elukim Mushiv Yechidim Baita, Hashem brings back the individuals to their home. Motzi Asirim B'Kosharot, he takes out those that are incarcerated B'Kosharot. The way that Rashi explains over here, B'Kosharot is B'Kasher, means at the appropriate time. Meaning that when Hashem took Bnei Yisrael out of Mitzrayim, it was in the spring, which was the nice weather. And he took them out at a time period where it was pleasant to leave. So that's the pasuk here juxtaposes the Moshiv Yechidim Baita. Hashem brings individuals to their home. Baita meaning here to the marriage or to the building of a home. It is the same one who's Motzi Asirim B'Kosho, takes those that were incarcerated, those that were enslaved, out in the appropriate season, means takes them out of Mitzrayim. So here you have this idea that Hashem's bringing Zibugim is similar to Yitziat Mitzrayim or Kriyat Yam Suf. Now, Tosu the Shantz asks, and we'll speak about it in a second, what is the reason to parallel it to Kriyat Yam Suf? First of all, the Pasuk only talks about Yitziat Mitzrayim, not about Kriyat Yam Suf. And what in particular about Kriyat Yam Suf is similar to the case here of Zibugim? So then the Gemara questions this whole premise. And says, "Va'ha Amar Rav Yehuda Marav, 40 yom kodem yitzirat avlad, bat kol yotzeit, 40 days prior to the conception of a fetus, a heavenly voice goes out, v'omeret, bat ploni leploni, the daughter of so-and-so is for so-and-so, bayit ploni leploni, house of so-and-so to so-and-so, sadeh ploni leploni, and the field of so-and-so to this individual." I mean, this is all predetermined. Predetermined what your field, what you will own, what your house will be, and who your wife will be. It's all predetermined. My answer is, Lokasha, Abzug Rishon, Abzug Sheni. That's in the first, and that's in the second. It will explain this in 1 minute. First of all, what is the idea here that Plony, the black Plony, says so-and-so to the daughter of so-and-so? It doesn't say the son of so-and-so to the daughter of so-and-so. So based on that, Tosafot says, Venir Larabi, Kodem Yitzirat HaZachar. This announcement happens before the creation of the male. Benim lo nolda nevkeva dain, benim nolda. Whether the female was born or not born already. Because you can't have it that it's announcing that this fetus will have such and such a zivug if the other person doesn't exist. Maybe she won't be born for 5 years. So that's why it uses the term bat ploni, that it's determined by the zachar. Because sometimes maybe the female is already created. Or maybe she's not created, but the determination is the zachar. And that's when it's made, the announcement's made. So sometimes it's bat ploni because the plonit doesn't exist anymore. On the other hand, there are other rishonim who discuss it. It has to do with who's created first. Whoever's created first is the one who the bat kol goes out and says so-and-so to either bat ploni or so-and-so to ben ploni, depending on who was first, whether it was the nekeva or the zachar. It also here mentions daughter, house, and field, which is the opposite way that the Gemara suggests that a person behaves. It says first a person should have a field, meaning a parnosa, then a person should buy a house, and after they have a parnosa and buy a house, then they should get a wife. And here it's mentioned the opposite order. It was wife, house, and field. Many speak about the fact that here it's not telling the order of how to do it, but rather the arachim, in terms of the importance or the significance. The wife is obviously the most significant of these items, then the house, then the sadeh. And so here it's talking about in terms of significance, it's giving you the order, not in terms of practically which one should come first. But these three items are items that are connected together because this is the normal course of a way a person should behave. The Rambam passes this way. A person should have a parnasa, then a house, and then get a wife. Now Rashi asks on our Gemara here, Mi havi zivug lefi resha v'zchut. Is it really true that the zivug has to do with the behavior of the individual. Even before the person, we know what he's going to be, whether he's a Rasha or a Tzaddik, the announcement of the Zivug. The fact that the announcement of the Zivug happens before we know anything about the individual tells you that it has nothing to do with the merits of the individual. But Rashi asks, Vim Tomar, Hagol Galui Lefanav. Of course, Hashem knows whether this person is going to be a Rasha or this person is going to be a Tzaddik. So then it could still mean that when he puts them together in the beginning, he knows what this person is going to be. Rashi answers, Hakobi de Shemaim, Chutz Mirat Shemaim. We have a principle that everything is in there predetermined except for Yirat Shemaim. And that's what the Gemara Masechet Nidah says. Malach Munel Arayon, the Malach that's appointed over conception, brings the tipa for the conception before God and says, what's there going to be the goral of this individual? Will it be Gibor, Chalash, Chacham, Tipesh, Ashir, Ani? Aval Tzaddik v'Rasha, he doesn't ask because Hakol Bidei Shemayim, Chutz Mirat Shemayim. So that's the only thing that's not predetermined. What's very interesting from Rashi over here is that Rashi sees the fact that it's not predetermined almost precludes it from Hashem knowing, quote unquote. Which is interesting because the Rambam himself in Hilchot Tshuva asked the question, if God knows everything and not everything is predetermined, how does God know everything? How do you reconcile between them? The Rambam over there says, he punts the question and says, it's bigger than I can explain over here. But the Raivad himself says he shouldn't have brought up the question if he's not going to answer the question. But the answer lies in something along the lines which Hashem is outside the prism of time. That the fact that we see things linearly is because we're inside the prism of time. And therefore we see everything in sequential manner. And so therefore if someone knows something, then that almost is predetermined because that must happen if they know the information. If it's, if you have like a bird's eye view and you're able to look over the whole time in one shot, then it's no longer necessarily predetermined just because you have knowledge, because you're outside the realm of time. So likely along those lines, Hashem might know whether the person is going to be a Tzaddik or a Rasha, but it's not predetermined because the person gets to make those choices of that behavior. But looking from above the prism of time, Hashem will always know what will happen. But nevertheless, because of Kol Bidei Shemayim Chutz Mirat Shemayim, you can't say that the Zivug that's being made up front already considers or takes into consideration the nature of that person or the behavior of that person later on. And that is the Stirat here. Rashi says, the Gemara's answer is, Haba Zivug Rishon, Haba Zivug Shani. Rashi says, Zivug Rishon, Lefi HaMazel. The first Zivug has to do according to Mazel. According to what's predetermined, how you're born, what Hashem assigned you. Zivug Sheni is the Fi Ma'asav. That's according to your behavior. So that is the one that's kasheh, because then Hashem has to bring them together. Rashi here doesn't explain exactly what it means, Zivug Rishon and Zivug Sheni. And to that, there are many interpretations as to exactly what Zivug Rishon is and Zivug Sheni. I'm just going to digress for a second, because the Tosfot HaShas explains it. And then we'll come to discuss other possibilities. Tosfot HaShas over here asks, Vim Tomar, Amay Nakat Kriyat Yam Suf? What does Kriyat Yam Suf have to do with Zibugim? Mitfei Mishar Nisim, Mishal Yitziat Mitzrayim. More than any other nace of Yitziat Mitzrayim. V'yesh Lomar, he says that because the word Kosharot, Chazal Darshan on the word Kosharot over here, that it means Bibichi U'Bishirot, crying and singing. Which, if you look in the Bach quotes that as an alternate within Rashi as the explanation of the word kosherot. Rashi explained kosherot is mana kasher, the time that it was appropriate to come out. Here, they darshan it because kosherot means bibchi, crying, and bishira. And that is, when was it that the shira of Bnei Israel was dependent on the crying of the Mitzrayim? That's at the Yam Suf, where they're singing shira because the death or the Yam Suf covering over and drowning the Mitzrayim is what provides their salvation. And now the Tosfot HaShas continues and says, "V'hainu kriyat yam suf, v'amar Rabbeinu Tam, perush midami le liyitziat Mitzrayim kriyat yam suf, shebaoto inyan shetava Kadosh Baruch Hu et Mitzrayim b'yam, kdei latzil et Bnei Yisrael, kamo horeg bala shel zeh, v'ishto shel zeh, u'mesiyan zeh lezeh, t'bizivug sheni kamayri." That sometimes God has to rearrange the marriages. So he has to have this person's wife pass away, this person's husband passed away, so he can get the couple together. So then there is Bechi and Shira. It has to be the death or the removal of one, which is the crying, that leads to the shira, to the zivug, or the second zivug. So here the Tosfot Shans suggests that there's a zivug rishon, which was the first marriage, and there's a zivug sheni, is when Hashem's trying to get the parties together. From here it seems like that zivug rishon and zivug sheni might be in competition with each other, or that there might be some influence that a person has over this zivug rishon and zivug sheni. You could argue simply, zivug rishon is the first marriage, and that's the person that's appropriate for the individual based on their mazel, based on what should happen. Zivug sheni is if that doesn't work out or something happens, and the person now has to get remarried. At this point, it's not the predetermined zivug. It has to be zivug. Now Hashem has to do it based on their ma'asim at this point. Based on their ma'asim, now you have to get them together. Others suggest it has to do with the time period where the person gets married. Person gets married very young, then it's based on mazel because they have yet to be determined whether what their masim are. They're too young. If they get married later on in life where their masim are already determined, that's zivug sheni. That is the point in time where there can be some determination based on the masim how the zivug is going to come about, and that's the more difficult one. Or it could be, and this is much more of the Kabbalistic view of zivugim, which is that there is a preordained, a predetermined zivug, min ha-shamayim, but then you come down to earth, and then the individual acts in a certain way, behaves in a certain way, and is trying to find or match up with that zivug they have, min ha-shamayim. So then, Hashem, the zivug sheni, which is the individual, trying to get the individual to the proper zivug that they meant for him, min ha-shamayim, is very difficult. Because here, it's dependent on his masim, it's dependent on how he acted. And therefore, is he deserving of what was predetermined for him or not? And that's the idea of zivug rishon. Zivug rishon is the theoretical zivug that he should get. Zivug sheni is the practical zivug that he ends up with. And the Kabbalistic view, we're trying to get the zivug sheni to match the zivug rishon. And obviously, if you don't get it right, then that's what maybe the Tosfot Shans is talking about, then you have to, Hashem has to adjust it. And that, as he adjusts it, he has to take out parties here, adjust things like that. Now, the Tosfot Shans continues and says that Zug Sheni is only a case when it's an Amon Amana, when it's a widow and a widower getting married. If one of the parties has yet to be married, is not a widow or widower, then that is not considered to be a Zivug Sheni, that's still considered to be a Zivug Rishon. So very interesting, again, within the Mishonim, or how to explain the Zivug Rishon, Zivug Sheni. The Tosfot over here asks a question from the Gemara and Moed Katan that we saw together, which is the problem there. The Gemara says that you're allowed to get engaged even on Tisha B'Av or during the 9 days because Shema Yikad Menu Acher. Maybe someone else will jump the gun. Well, if it's already predetermined, why is someone else jumping the gun? The Gemara over there does not give the answer of Zivug Rishon and Zivug Sheni, which would have been the answer. That Zivug Rishon, that's right. But Zivug Sheni, then you have Shema Yikad Menu Acher. And that could fit into all the interpretations that we spoke about here about what Zivug Rishon and Zivug Sheni is. Tosfot says over there, Amai lo mukim otam milte de Shmuel bezug sheni. Why doesn't the Gemara over there talk about Shmuel's din that you're allowed to get engaged in Chol HaMoed and other periods with Hashem Yikad Menu Acher? And they ask the same question about Arbaim Yom that we have over here, but that gives a different answer. Over there, the Gemara gives the answer, which is that a person can interfere. Now, what does that mean, interfere? There, there's Machlok Rishonim, through his tefillot, he could interfere. That whether that means that the person can daven to improve their mazel, or does that mean that a person can daven and then actually ruin or overturn what should have been, even to the negative side? But that's the way the Gemara answers over there. That might relate to how Zivug Rishon and Zivug Sheni, especially the Kabbalistic view, or the way that Rashi is speaking over here, that the Fiyah Mazel or the Fiyah Ma'asav, that also might be determined by this, that a person can, through tefillah, either cause the ruin of what should have been a shidduch, meaning that he inappropriately asks or goes after a woman, and that's why the Gemara over there says, a person should never daven to have a zivug with a particular woman, but rather should just daven that Hashem brings him to the proper zivug. Because if you daven for a particular woman, it might not be the right woman. So the Gemara says over there, you should daven more generically rather than at a particular shidduch. Or, the other way around, that a person could be deserving through predeterminants of a certain woman, but if he davens and through his matzim, he might improve that situation and get even a better woman. So that answer in the Gemara and Moed Katan doesn't necessarily conflict with the answer here. It might actually coalesce and enhance what we're saying here in the answer of Zibuk Rishon and Zibuk Sheni. Right now, the Gemara continues and says, Rabbi Elazar Omer, Mikana Le'al Pishtayim, Adkan Bo Plige. They don't argue, Rabbi Shua and Rabbi Elazar, in the Mishnah, Ela Bikinui Vistira, only in the warning and the seclusion. Aval B'tumah Erechad Me'eman. But what you would draw the conclusion from their statement is that when it comes to an aid about whether there was an act of ni'uf, then one aid would be sufficient. You only need two aidim with regards to the kinoi, according to both of them, for stira, according to Rabbi Yoshua. But nobody suggests over here that you need two aidim to prove that she was tmeah in order to stop the whole process of the sota. Now, why would you assume that your eid echad is sufficient over here? Why would you even think that you don't need two eidim? It should be obvious that you need two eidim over here. Why is there even a havamina that one eid should suffice? The answer is raglaim ledavar. That we already have a lot of circumstantial evidence that there's something wrong here. All we need is a little push to get us over the edge. And therefore, maybe one eid is sufficient. And that's what the Gemara is concluding here. One eid would be sufficient. But it's not nami. If we have one witness that says, I saw her having this ni'uf, this extramarital affair, lo aita shulta. That's it, it's over. There's no mei sulta anymore because we have evidence of the fact that something was wrong over here. Midoraita minolon de mehemen edachat. From the Torah, how do we know that edachat is sufficient? The Tanu Rabbanan, ve'ed ein ba. Says that there is no aid. That's what's written in Parshat Sota. The reason she's drinking the Mei Sota is because we have a safek here, because aid ain't ba. There's no witness to the act of what happened when they were in seclusion. B'shnayim akatuv b'mdaber, o'einu el afilu echad. When the Torah uses the word aid, does aid mean one, or does aid mean two? Tamal Omar, the Pasuk says, lo yakum aid echad b'ish. So over there, the Pasuk says, one witness may not come to testify in capital crimes. So why does the Torah there say eid echad? Lo yakum eid be'ish. Had you just said lo yakum eid be'ish, any yodeshu echad? Eid is singular. So why do you have to tell me eid echad? Eid by definition is one because it's written in the singular form. Why does the Torah then add the word echad as a qualifier afterwards? Matam lar echad ze bnei av. This gives you a paradigm. The kol makom shenemar eid. The definition of the word aid means two. Because aid, even though it's written in the singular, we'll call it, that's a kat edim. That is a group of individuals who can determine the outcome of a case. So they're spoken about in the singular form, even though they are multiple people. The fact that it has to specify echad over here tells you that the normal meaning of the word aid means two. So b'amar rachmana, and the Torah says here, by sota, ve'eid ein ba. Trey leit ba, el echad. There's no edim here, there are no two edim here, but rather only one eid. And so now that's the meaning here in Parshat Sota. Parshat Sota means there aren't two edim, but rather one eid. Because otherwise you would have learned eid ein ba means there's not one eid, ella no edim at all. Which would have been the simpler way to read the Parshat. I'm not saying don't read it that way, it's saying here, there aren't two edim, but rather one eid. Now, Tosfot Shas over here says, you could have solved all this problem, made life easy, by simply saying, leave out eid ein ba, don't write that, and also don't write eid echad. And then it would have thought that the word over here, that one eid is sufficient because you have raglaim ledavar, because you already have all the circumstantial evidence. So Tosfot Shas over here says, without a proof from the pasuk, he wouldn't say that. He says, Yishlamar, the ein ze svara kol kach lamin eid echad mikoch svara. And if it just for that logical argument based on the circumstantial evidence, we would have not have said that eid echad is sufficient. Ilav denach ilav mikra. We need a backup from the pasuk. And without a backup from the pasuk, you will not assume that eid echad would be sufficient, even though you have raglaim ledavar circumstantial evidence over here. And that's why the Gemara is pursuing a source in the pasuk, and why the Torah went out of a way to give a source out of the pasuk to teach you that this dindoraita of eid echad is sufficient. Pasuk continues, ve'eid ein ba, there's no testimony or there's no witness to the what happened in seclusion. Ve'ilo nitpasa means that she wasn't forced, she wasn't raped, she was a willing participant over here, therefore she is asura. The Gemara says, el taima dichtiv, lo yakum echad be'ish, hav lav hochi, only because it says, Lo yakum eid echad be'ish, because of that I know that over here, one aid is sufficient to say that she's a surah. Had it not been for that, hava mina aid de sota echad hu. If it wasn't for that case, I would have thought that the eid echad by sota means one aid. Via filu chad leka, el b'mai mitasra. So right now is faced with the problem, because there are two ways to read the pasuk. One way to read the pasuk is, eid ein ba means there are no two aidim, but there is one aid. But that's only we learned that way because we now know what the word aid means too. But had you not had that information, you would assume that word aid means one. So aid ein ba means there's not one aid, but there are no aidim. If there are no aidim, then why is she a surah over here? Because he knows in Pasach she was a willing participant and now she's a surah. If you know aidim, why is she a surah? Doesn't make sense to read the pasuk even without the information that the word aid means two. I wouldn't have learned the pasuk that way because there's no reason to make her a surah over here. We have no evidence. Because it says ein ba. There was no aid here at all. So the answer of the Gemara is, itzrich. Sach l'lachamir, ein ba, ein ne'aman ba. Edama means that ein ne'aman ba. One aid is not sufficient and he wouldn't be believed. That's what it means, ein ba. I would have read the pasuk that way. That one witness is not enough. You need two witnesses. Gemara says, ein ne'aman ba. If he's not believed, elamai ba'i. So then what do you need in order to make her a surah? Adikatrei. Then you need two. Gemara says, lishtok raminei. Then don't write anything. Da'acha davar davar mi mamon. Because then we will learn out Xerah Shava from Mamon, where in each of those cases the word davar is used. By Niuf it says, ki matzah ba irvat davar. And by Mamon it says, al pishnei edim yakum davar. So just like by Mamon you need two, certainly by Arayot you're going to need two. So lishta kramia, and we will have that Xerah Shava, and then dano, and I would have known, me to have a kol idiot shibit Torah. It'll be no different than any other testimony in the Torah, that I need two edim. Mar says, itzrich. No, that would not have been sufficient grounds. Sakadat chamina sota shiny. Sota is different. Diraglayim ledavar. Because there's circumstantial evidence over here, I would have thought possibly that one aid would be sufficient. Shari kinala vinistara. He warned her. She secluded. Litamin ba aid echad. I would have thought that an aid echad would be believed. And that's what the pasuk is coming to teach you. Ve aid ein ba. Had I not had the information from the other psukim about what the definition of aid is, that's how I would have read the pasuk, that aid means one aid, and it's telling you that one aid is not believed over here. You need two aidim. Why would I even thought that one aid is believed over here? Because of the raglaim ledavar. Umi matzidat mar de'ein ne'aman ba. Can you really say that that's how to read the pasuk, that one aid is not believed over here? V'sharia, and she's muteret. V'amirichti, v'hino nipasa, michlal da'asura. The latter half of the pasuk says that she was not raped, therefore she is a surah. But if you're telling me that the Eid Echad is not believed, then why is she a surah? Mar says, itzrich. Sakadatcha eine man ba ad de ikatre. I would have said she's not believed until there are two edim. Ubetre nami he delonit pasa. And even when you have two edim where they are believed, that's all assuming that she was a willing participant and not raped. Kamash malon, that's what the limud of the pasuk is from Lo Yakum. Eid Echad Be'ish teaches us, don't interpret the pasuk this way to say we don't believe one aid, we only believe two aidim. But rather it comes to teach you that the aid here means two aidim, and aidim ain't ba, there aren't two aidim here, but there is one aid. And since we have one aid, v'ilonot pasa, surah, she becomes a surah, and the Eid Echad is ne'aman because of the raglayim ledavar. The Eid Echad is ne'aman, and therefore it will shut down the whole case, and say she doesn't drink the mei sota, and she is a surah lebala. And so that's what the limud that comes out of here. Rabbi Shua Omer, Rabbi Shua says, Mekana Laopi Shnaim. My taimo de Rabbi Yeshua. What is the reasoning behind Rabbi Yeshua's position? Amar Kra, Ba. The Pasuk says, Ve'eid ein Ba. That there is no witness over here. Ba, velo bikinoi. Ba, velo bistira. That the word Ba comes to be a mute over here, which is that over here, eid ein Ba. Over here, two edim are not, but one is. By edim tuma, one is sufficient, but that's not true by kinoi, and that's not true by stira. Over there, you will need two edim. That's interesting that the Gemara asked why about Rabbi Yeshua. Rabbi Yeshua has the simpler version of a position over here, because he requires two edim by kinoi, two edim by stira, and that's what normally would be the case. By any case of arayot, he would require two edim. Why is the Gemara asking my taima? The answer is because already the Torah showed us by Tumah that you have Eid Echad because of Raglaim Ledabar. Well, if that's the case, maybe Eid Echad should be sufficient by Kinui and Stira as well. Along comes with Yeshua to say no, so he needs a Pasuk to tell him, don't use the Raglaim Ledabar here. This has normal standards of regular Eidut, which is you need two Eidim in these cases. Rabbi Leiz Omer, Ba, Velo Bikinui. The Miyud comes to tell you that here one Eid is sufficient, but not by Kinui. Vema ba velo bistira. Let us say, what about the case of ba velo bistira? Stira itkish lituma. Stira has a ekish with tuma, dichtiv. Vinistira vihi nitmea. She was secluded, and she became tmea. So just like by tuma, eid echad is sufficient. So too by the stira, the eid echad is sufficient. Kinui nami itkish lituma. Well, if that's the case, Kinoi also has a hekesh tuma dichtiv. Mikinei tishto, v'hi nitmea. That he was Mikanei's wife, and she became defiled. Hamiyit rachman abba. Well, that's why we have a miyut. The miyut tells you only by tuma, not over here. Where it says, umay ra'it. How do you know which one is which? One of them you're saying, we say that the hekesh is grounds to say that one eid is sufficient. And the other place you're saying the word ba tells you don't make the hekesh. Mistavra stira adifa. It makes more sense to say stira is the one that only requires one aid. Shekein osrata kituma. Because stira has the same impact on the woman as tuma. If you have an aid achad about tuma, the woman now is a surala bala. If you have evidence about the fact that she was secluded with this individual after the kinoi, that also makes her a surala bala. So since stira has the same impact on the woman as tuma, therefore, we'll say, one aid is sufficient by tuma, one aid is sufficient by stira. It says, adar abe kinoi adif, shein ikar gorom lo. Says, wait a minute, kinoi should be the ikar, because all this is precipitated because of the husband's warning. The husband never does a kinoi, none of this will get off the ground. So kinoi is the ikar part, that should be subject to the one aid rule. Ilav stira, kinoi mi ika. My answer is that kinoi is only relevant if there was a stira after the kinoi. So yeah, kinoi is what starts things out, but still, the stira is a necessary step. Otherwise, the kinoi is meaningless. And so the Gemara says, well, you love kinoi, stira mayani. You could say the same thing in the opposite. Stira, seclusion, yichud, is not an automatic oser, unless there was kinoi beforehand. So they're both integral over here. Afilu achi, stira adifa, tadchalta de tumahi. That stira is more parallel to tuma because it's the beginning of the tuma. Kinoi is simply a warning. Stira, seclusion, is basically the assumption of tuma because we don't have evidence to the contrary. And so stira, the seclusion, is the beginning of the process of tuma. Every tuma comes about because there was a stira there. So even without kinoi, tuma comes with stira. And beyond that, that stira is also assumed to be tuma. And that's why they're much more parallel. And because of that, Rabbi Lezer believes one aid by tuma, one aid by stira, but two aidim by kinoi. Those of you here notes that Yushalmi brings other psukim to explain the machloket between Rabbi Lezer and Rabbi Yoshua, and also relates their machloket to an issue with regards to whether kina is a mitzvah or not. The Rebbe Lezer, who's mi Beit Shammai, who believes that you can only get divorced for an evar tavar, therefore he sees it as a mitzvah to do the drinking of the Somei Sota. Whereas Rebbe Yeshua, who's sover ke Beit Hillel, who says you can get divorced for any reason, sees the kinoi as only being a reshut. And that also then influences their opinions with regards to the number of edim that are required for stira. Which is, how do you darshan the pasuk ki matzah ba ervat davar? Matzah means with edim. The question is ervat davar. So for Rabbi Yeshua, it means ervat davar. He found an ervat davar. That's the stira. Whereas for Rabbi Yeshua, it's davar. That the dibur is matzah ba ervat davar. He requires two edim. So he only requires two edim by the kinoi and not by the stira. Matnitan diloki aitana. Our Mishnah is not like this Tana, and this is what I mentioned to you before, that there's a third position, besides Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Eliezer, which is Tatanya. Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Yudu, Omer, Mishum, Rabbi Eliezer. So this is Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda, in the name of Rabbi Lezer. So it's another Rabbi Lezer's position, but a different view of it. Mekanei ishto, kanei al pi eid echad. Kinui only has to be done by one eid, or al pi atzmo, or by the Baal himself. Umashkela al pi shnayim. But the stira has to have been done with two eidim. So it's the exact opposite of Rabbi Lezer in our Mishnah. One requires one eid, one requires two eidim, but it's the opposite way around. He says two eidim for stira, one eid for kinui. Heshivu chachamim ledivrei Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda. Chachamim responded to Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda's suggestion of what Rabbi Lezer's position was. Ein ledavar sof. And there's no end to this. Now, ein ledavar sof over here is not the classic ein ledavar sof that we'd see in other places, which is ein ledavar sof, which is that this is a perpetual problem that will keep coming up, but rather ein ledavar sof, the way Rashi interprets it over here is that any time a husband gets angry at his wife, or he sees that his wife is nistara, he'll say that he did kinoi. He'll lie about the kinoi and precipitate a problem of sota. Because the seclusion will get him upset that this woman is secluded with the man. He only requires kinoi al pied achar pi atzmo. So therefore he can generate the kinoi even though there was no kinoi. So we're in the Devar Sof means that any time there's any seclusion, that will automatically end up in a problem of sota, because the husband will then get upset and say that he did kinoi, and we have no evidence to the contrary, because kinoi by the husband is sufficient grounds for a kinoi. The way the Tosfot Shas explains it over here is, in the davar sof, lefish ain a mind bod kimota. Because in the end, it's going to cast aspersions on the mei sota. Im lo kinei. If he really didn't warn her, and he claims he warned her, now they're going to bring her up to the mikdash, viomeret shezinta. And she says, I did have an extramarital affair. Nevertheless, the Mayim didn't do it. After she drinks the water, nothing happens. And she says, look, I had an extramarital affair. Nothing happened. Why nothing happened was because he never was Mikanela. He lied about the Kinoi. So that's the problem here. So he says it'll cast dispersions on the Mei Sultan. That's what's saying the Davar Sof. That allowing Kinoi to be done in private precipitates problems later on, which according to Rashi means that the husband will falsely enter a case of sota because of the fact that he doesn't need any evidence, or the Tosfot Shas says, what is this idea of in the davar sof? The zimin de lokani v'amar kanai. That times that he didn't warn her, and he'll lie and say that he did warn her. It's going to cast aspersions on the mei sota when he acts in that way. So that's what it means in the davar sof. Mar says, how the Mishnah tenu yesh the davar sof? Well, based on that, the implications are that in our Mishnah, that there is an end to this, that you're not going to have this problem. Zimnin delo istatar, v'amar istatar. Why can't you say the same thing in our Mishnah about Rabbi Lezer's opinion? Rabbi Lezer in the Mishnah says you only need two eidim for kinoi, and then you can have a piatzmo, he can say that she was nistara. So he can, in the same way, precipitate a problem of sota by simply lying about the fact that she's secluded with that individual. So why is our Mishnah not subject to the same, let's call it abuse, that we're claiming is going to happen in Rabbi Lezer's opinion according to the Braita? So Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Yosef and Rabbi Yochan af the divrei Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda in the Devar Sof. Also, according to Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda, there's in the Devar Sof. Rabbi says, af the divrei Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda, velo mi baile mishmateinu? Ah, so too by his case. Of course, by the Mishnah it's that way. You've got the... what's your talui be what? Backwards. Adarabba the Mishnah tenu ika ikar. Hotam leka ikar. You're talking about in our Mishnah, at least there is some start that we have evidence of, which is that the kinui was done in front of two. By the case of Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda, we don't even know if it ever got off the ground. So there's a bigger safek over there. Ella, itmar, yachi itmar. This is the way you have to express it. Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yochan, the divre Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda, af the Mishnah teinu ein le davar sof. That's how it should be said, that even in our Mishnah, ein le davar sof. Certainly in the Braita, ein le davar sof, because he can lie about getting it off the ground, so there for sure we can end up in problems with ein le davar sof. But even in our Mishnah, where there was at least a start, or a proper start, we had kinui by two eidim, nevertheless ein le davar sof, because he can claim stira, even though there wasn't a stira, because it only needs to be him, no other evidence. Right, so that's what Gemara is saying now. In the Mishnah, there's a bigger basis to say that he should be believed. Nevertheless, we're still worried about it. There's still a problem here that he could lie under the sheet of Rabbi Eliezer, and that could cause us a lot of problems in the Devar Sof. That's exactly what the Gemara is saying. Right. Also, the Achiezer, based on this, explains the Shita of Rabbi Eliezer over here, that the need for two Edim by Kinoi is not because it's not a Kinoi without two Edim, but rather, two Edim are needed in order to generate the drinking of the Mei Sota. So what he points out is that the two Edim here are not Edim that make it into Kinoi, or make it into Stira, because Yichud is Asur, even without Edim. Kinoi, we're going to see in the Gemara in a second, works, seemingly, even without Edim. So what's the purpose of the Edim? The Greeks claims over here that the Edim are not here to make it into Kinoi, or to make it into Stira, but rather, we need Edim to get to the point of drinking the Sota. And they're necessary, that the woman has to violate a Kinoi with two Edim, or violate a Stira with two Edim in order to generate the drinking of the Sota. That's basically the Gzerat HaKatuv here. And not because the Edim make it into Kinoi or make it into Stira. It is Kinoi and Stira even without that. And the requirement of Edim is simply a way to generate the Gzerat HaKatuv of the Parsha of Sota. Right now, Amar Michanina Misura, Lo Leima Inish Litadei Bizman Azeh, person should not say to his wife in the modern time, Lo Tisteri Bahadi Ploni, do not seclude with so-and-so, Dilma Kaimalan Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda, because maybe we paskin like Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda, Tamar Kinoi Al Pi Atzmo, that Kinoi can be done even in the privacy of one's home, you don't need any Edim, Umistatra, and then she secludes, Velekaidna Meisota Lemivtika, and we don't have Meisota today in order to clarify the situation. V'kasarla ilave, and then she will become a surah to him, isura le'olam, forever, because there's no way to rectify or to clarify this safek. The truth is that the way that he expresses it, and the Achronim asked this, is it should be a problem even in the time of the Beit HaMikdash. Our safek here is not the question of drinking the Meisota, it's a safek of whether we paskin like Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda. That same safek would exist in the time of the Mikdash. And therefore you'd have the same problem in the time of the Mikdash. So why is he specifying about in the modern time? It'd also be true in the time of the Mikdash. Because we wouldn't give him to drink the Meisota because we suffered, we passed on like Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda. In addition to that, the question of why would we pass on like Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda? We have a Mishnah, and that's a Braita. And if you have a competition between a Mishnah and a Braita, we'd always favor a Mishnah over a Braita. So then, what is the Chashash here? Possible that we're choshesh for this sheet of Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda, because Gemara further on is going to bring a list of opinions that seem to take up this position of Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda, as it seems like we actually have a lot of support within the Gemara for his opinion, despite the fact that it comes from a Braita. Alright, the Chalkat Mechokek over here mentions that the reason why it's only a problem today and not a time of the Mikdash is because in the time of the Mikdash, they could create a Meisota drinking. So even after if he warned her privately and were choshesh for the sheet of Rabbi Yossi that she can't drink now because it's a fake, he could then warn her and she could then seclude afterwards and purposely generate the need to drink Meisota. And by doing that, it will also rectify the case of Safek beforehand. But in the modern era, or post the Churban HaBayit, you don't have that option to rectify the problem. Are there those that don't like that explanation? Likely because of the problem of Nistera. She's not allowed to seclude independent of the warning. She's not allowed to be Yichud with this individual. And you would have to violate Yichud in order to generate the need for the Meisota. And we wouldn't permit that just to get her into a position where she can drink the Meisota. So they don't love that answer. Now, as far as the Bichoshesh, the Sheet of Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, see here is something along the lines of what the Achiezer said, which is that Kinoi, according to Rabbi Eliezer and according to Rabbi Yeshua, might be that they agree fundamentally with Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, that Kinoi without Edim is Kinoi. Just, in order to have the Meisota, you need to have two Edim. And what that shows you is that the Kinoi is effective, at least partially, to make the woman a surah lebala, even without the Edim here. To drink the Meisota, then you need two Edim. So what that, in the end, does is it generates, or in essence, Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Eliezer are supportive of this version of Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda, that Kinoi works and causes problems even without Edim. They just say to get to Mei Sota, you need Edim. Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda doesn't say that. He says even without Edim, you can get to Mei Sota. But they fundamentally agree, like the Gris says, that the Kinoi is a Kinoi, and that's why it'll be a problem of warning the wife in this manner, because it would generate an Isur that can't be rectified. Because you can't drink the Mei Sota. If you can't drink the Mei Sota, you can't rectify that Kinoi. Now, the lack of Edim does not change the fact that there is Kinoi over here. Now, the Beit HaLevi does take issue with this position of the Achiezer and says just the opposite, that while what the Achiezer says might be true with regards to Stira, with regards to Kinoi, he says it's just the opposite, that Kinoi will not exist without the Edim. It's not simply that they are a Beirur, but they are the ones that generate the Etzem HaKinoi. And he proves that from the fact that the Gemara over here only assigns this position of the possibility of Kinoi by the Baal to the wife directly to Rabbi Yosef or Rabbi Yehuda, and not in the position of Rabbi Eliezer or Rabbi Yeshua in the Mishnah who require two Edim. From that he shows that they would believe that there's no Kinoi at all, similar to what Rashi suggested on the Mishnah when he says, Vimlo kinela bifnei shnayim ena neseret alav bistirata ve'enu mashkeh. Nothing happens when there's no Kinoi in front of Edim, and the Kinoi of the Baal does absolutely nothing. And now we go back to the beginning of the Gemara, which is Amar Reish Lakish, Ma Lashon Kinoi. What does the Kinoi mean here? Why is the Lashon Kinoi used over here? Davar Matil Kina Beina LeBein Acherim. Something that causes friction between her and others. Alma Kasavar Kinoi Al Pi Atzmo. It's clear that he believes that Kinoi can be done in private. Bekuli Alma Lo Yode De Kanila. And no one else knows that he has warned her from secluding. Vamri mai dekama dekabadla. So then they say, what's with this woman that she's separating, or she's not being friendly, or she's not engaging with us? Vatulameva kina bada. And then they're going to be kina, meaning upset, kas, as Rashi says, angry or upset about the fact that she no longer socializes with them or engages with them, because of the kinoi that her husband did. And that's what the kinoi does. The kinoi is that it generates friction or altercations with other people because the husband now stopped her from interacting with these other individuals. The Gemara is interesting and strange at the same time here, because what the Gemara seems to indicate is that it's okay for the woman to socialize with the men. It's only because he warned her now that she stopped socializing with the men. Which goes against the Gemara in Kiddushin, which says that it's a lack of tzniut for women even to engage in conversation with a man, especially in their day. I'd say it's less so in today's world. But the second question is that kinoi has to be done towards a particular individual. And therefore, what does it mean here? It's causing friction with the world at large. There's only one individual that he warned her. It's not a generic warning over here. And so for that reason, this is a more difficult explanation. The answer to all those questions might be based on the Yushami. The Yushami talks about whether there can be kinoi with a relative, that she is muteretz b'miached ita, which is that, can there be kinoi for a father, for a brother, for a child? Can a husband issue a kinoi in that sense? In that way, then a lot of these questions would fall away, because if you believe, like the Yerushalmi, that there's a possibility of kinoi even with relatives, then it might be individuals that she's muteretz to be mityached ita, it's relatives that she's muteretz to speak with, yet there's still a din of kinoi over here. And that might answer a lot of these questions or a lot of these problems, because then it does not involve third parties. Rabbi Yemar bar Rav Shamaya Mishmei d'Abai Yamar Devar Matil Kina Beino d'Beina. Something that causes friction or tension in the marriage itself. Almar Kasavar Kinoi Al Pishnayim Edim. The kinoi is done in a public way. V'kulei Amayadi D'Kanila. Everybody knows that he warned her not to seclude this individual. And he is the one that is instigating or causing her to be angry, because she says he's suspecting me of doing this behavior, and that causes the friction. Alma kasavre dasur lekanot. Both of them agree or seemingly indicate that one should not do kina, because they view kina in a very negative light. Which is that kina over here is something that generates friction, anger between parties. They're just arguing about whether the anger is between the woman and third parties or the woman and her husband. Umand amar mutar lekanot. Ma'ula Shon Kinoi. There's obviously an alternate opinion, and here we're going to get into this in tomorrow's daf, the machloket here between Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva as to whether it's a mitzvah or a reshut. But over here, there's someone who thinks it's mutar lekanot. What does the word kinoi mean? Rabbi Nachman Yitzchak en kinoi elashon hatra'a. That the kinoi is a lashon of warning. V'cheinu omer, v'kaneh Hashem le'artzo. That Hashem warned the land. This is in Yoel, where Hashem, after the perek that discusses the fact that there's going to be this massive locust plague that is going to ruin the land, he basically, v'kaneh Hashem le'artzo, he warns the locusts that they don't have permission to be in his land anymore. They don't have permission to be here anymore. And that's what the word hatra kinoi means. Hatra means a warning. And so the truth is that the word kinoi probably means both in the context of sota. It's a warning from the husband to the wife not to act or not to behave in this manner. And it's also kina in the sense of kas, that it causes friction between the parties, because here the husband is suspecting the wife, or the fact that the husband has to warn her because the woman's acting in this manner also creates a certain amount of friction. And so it's probably true that both kinei means both of these items in this situation. The question is, which one do you emphasize? Do you emphasize the hatra'ah aspect of it? And that's because it's mutar lekanot. Or do you emphasize the kas aspect, which seems to indicate that you shouldn't be doing kina, and the kina is going to precipitate this type of kas or friction between the parties, which we don't want. All right, we're going to stop here. Four lines down on the top of Gimel Amud Aleph, and tomorrow we'll continue this discussion of kina'ah, of whether it's appropriate or not appropriate for the husband to warn his wife in such a manner.